You're listening to Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, featuring Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President of Public Policy at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. And now, here's Gary.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining me today on this special edition of Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom. I'm Gary Bauer, the Senior Vice President of Public Policy here at the James Dobson Family Institute. And I'm honored, along with our whole team, to serve alongside our good friend, Dr. James Dobson. Dr. Dobson and all of us have been in this fight for religious liberty and the sanctity of life and many of these issues that really define what America is all about. We're at a time in our country, my friends, where there's a bit of national amnesia. I think everybody is beginning to realize that we are not passing on to the rising generation the most important information they need about our country, about what it stands for, and where our liberty comes from. And so to have a conversation about that today, we are honored to have as our guest on the program a longtime friend of mine, an author and speaker, Jerry Newcomb. Jerry is the executive director of the Providence Forum. He's also the senior producer and on-air host and a columnist for Dr. James Kennedy Ministries. Now, listen to this, my friends. I don't know how you do this, Jerry. Jerry has produced or co-produced more than 70, that's 70, one-hour television specials that have aired nationwide. He's written or co-authored over 30 books, including What If Jesus Had Never Been Born, Doubting Thomas, and A New Birth of Freedom. He earned his doctorate of ministry in 2008 from Knox Theological Seminary. Jerry, I always have to update my bio. Are you're married to Christy? You have two grown children. Is it still three grandchildren?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, look, welcome to Family Talk. Jerry, I Dr. Dobson and his wonderful wife, Shirley, and all of your friends here at JDFI send greetings to the D. James Kennedy Ministry and send our warmest regards to you. We're honored to have you on the program today. You know, Jerry, you've interviewed me. I bet you've interviewed me 30 times.
Wow.
And I'm going to get even with you today. But in all seriousness, I have never been interviewed by you and ever felt that I had been mistreated or my remarks had been twisted. And I can unfortunately only say that by about a few people over the years, because as you know, American journalism has gone off the rails as so many other things have gone off the rails. But I'd like to begin by you just telling us your heart. Why have you spent so much time and effort trying to get the American people and more specifically, America's young people to understand the true meaning of the American founding and why it was a revolutionary moment unlike anything that has been seen in the history of mankind?
Well, we're really privileged to be Americans. And unfortunately, the vast majority of Americans today have forgotten the source of American liberty, and that is our Judeo-Christian heritage. And so I've been very much involved by the grace of God with D. James Kennedy Ministries, which is still, that's my full-time employer. And there's even a new division within D. James Kennedy Ministries that I'm privileged to head up, and it's called Providence Forum. Ultimately, that was founded by Peter Lilbeck, and Providence Forum is geared towards basically educating Americans, starting with Christians, to appreciate the heritage that we have. It's not just because it's interesting history and so forth. It's because it's the source of our freedom. You know, you take away God and ultimately you lose those freedoms. In fact, I like to say this, the American experiment, and that's what it is. The American experiment can be summarized in two key phrases, self-rule under God. If you remove either of those two phrases, you really lose the source of our freedom. And I think the left, as you well know, they have their big guns aimed at both of those prongs. There's a statement, Gary, that you have often made in your end of the day reports, which I find to be vital reading. And the statement is, the left doesn't want to win the debate. The left wants to shut the debate down. I have quoted that in so many different outlets because it's so true. And I think what we need to do, though, is be armed with the facts and to speak the truth in love and try and help people to understand that if you remove God, you remove the source of our freedoms.
Well said, Jerry. And thank you for the shout out for my end of day. That's where I kind of put all my emotion each day. I'm not sure what I'm doing to the reader, but I feel better after I've pontificated for a while about the things I see around me. You know, Jerry, years ago, back in 2000, I visited a lot of high schools, and I was getting strange questions from a lot of the students. And it made me see really in a very direct way that they really weren't being taught American history. And I remember asking students, do you understand, I said, that America was found on really a religious idea or a moral idea that's in the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence? And I offered them $20 if they could finish for me the sentence, "We hold these truths." And in visits to over 100 schools, I only lost $40. Talk about that sentence and why it is so significant about the meaning of America.
Well, it really shows that the founders recognized our rights come from God. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. And among these are the right to life, the right to liberty, and the right to the pursuit of happiness. And this is really important because if you take away God, you take away the source of our rights. In fact, in a documentary that I've made recently for Providence Forum, again, part of D. James Kennedy Ministries, it's called Endowed by Their Creator. And there's a section we have in there where we contrast the American Revolution with the French Revolution. And some people think, oh, they're kind of two sides of the same coin. No, they're really not. In fact, it's probably better to call the American one the American War for Independence. But anyway, one of the guests in our program, and by God's grace, we had a lot of really great guests, but Dennis Prager of PragerU makes this statement. This is in our film. The American Revolution and the French Revolution is the battle in the United States. Which revolution will prevail? This, in so many ways, God being obvious. Now, they loathe the idea of God in the French Revolution. The secular republic was the ideal. In America, they believed in secular government, but in a God-based society, because rights come from God in America. And you can only have liberty if you have God. This is a logical, this is not a faith statement I'm making. People will either feel comfortable or people will either feel accountable for their behavior to God or the state. Those are your two choices. It's an absurdity to believe that they'll be good if they're accountable only to themselves. If you're only accountable to yourself, you will always justify what you do. So it's foolishness to believe you can make a good society where everybody is only accountable morally to themselves. This is the battle, the French Revolution and the American Revolution, and God is the ultimate issue. Again, that's a statement from Dennis Prager in our film, my latest film on the Foundation of American Liberty series, Endowed by Their Creator.
Well said. And of course, Dennis Prager is a Jewish American.
And
it reminds me of the fact, Jerry, that, and I'm not sure most Christians understand this. And you correct me if I get any of this wrong, because I really feel that you're an expert on this. But our founders, these were very learned men, very well-read men. And they certainly were familiar with Roman and Greek political philosophy, and they got ideas out of those two civilizations that they folded into the American Republic. But the most important ideas in the American founding, really the founders got from the Old Testament, the First Testament, and the New Testament. the ideas about the dignity of man, because we've been made in the image of God, and the separation of powers, because men are evil. And so you have to have a lot of checks and balances in order to limit the damage of their passions and their vices and so forth. I think this is my instinct. I know I haven't seen a study on it, but if you said to American young people, or maybe Americans generally, do you think the Bible had much to do with the American founding? I'm afraid a lot of them would say, oh, no, the founders didn't want the Bible. They have anything to do with American government.
That's so true. And yet, even now in our highly secular age, you know, whenever somebody becomes president and they're sworn in, there on the Bible. Now, the Constitution doesn't mandate that they do that, but George Washington started the tradition in his, you know, with his native Anglican tradition, where they would do that and they would say the word, so help me God. Again, these are not rules that are stipulated in the Constitution, but in 46 times of presidents being sworn in, they've been doing the same tradition, following the same thing George Washington did. By the way, he reached over during that first inauguration, George Washington did, and he kissed the Holy Bible. Mm. And I remember Dr. Kennedy once talked about that. He mentioned that, and he said, wow, that's enough to give the ACLU apoplexy. And I learned a word in that statement from Dr. Kennedy, apoplexy. but it's true. And even apart from the symbol of the Bible or the idea of swearing in on the Bible, biblical teaching does indeed undergird so much of the American experiment. I mean, even those words from the Declaration of Independence that we talked about earlier, those are theological propositions when you think about it.
Yes.
It may have been self-evident to Thomas Jefferson and these other men who grew up knowing the Bible, as one scholar put it, and his name was Dr. Donald S. Lutz. He's the Lutz of Heinemann and Lutz, where they studied all these different writings that were so important to the founding fathers that they quoted in their political writings. They found that the Bible was quoted four times more than any human author. But then the three most quoted human authors were Christian sources in this order: Montesquieu, Sir William Blackstone, and John Locke. But anyway, you see that biblical teaching undergirds so much, including that idea that, you know, we are endowed by our Creator, that there is even a Creator, and He's endowed us with these rights. God-given rights are not negotiable privileges. They are firm. In fact, in my film, I close the whole thing with John F. Kennedy in his inauguration speech, where he said, you know, the belief in America that's so important, our forebears held, is that the rights of man come not from the generous hand of the state, but from God. And that's the whole point. And if we ever lose that, as Ronald Reagan said, didn't you serve in the Reagan administration?
Yes, I did.
You probably were there when he made this statement that America is one nation under God. But if we ever forget that we're one nation under God, we'll be one nation gone under.
Mm. He said it many, many times. He first said it, I'm afraid to admit, because it marks how long I've been walking around. I heard him say it in a speech in 1964 that became a famous speech he gave on behalf of Barry Goldwater. And in that speech, he talked about God's hand in America, and he said that the world could not remain half slave and half free. He was referring to the battle between communism and freedom. He said any more than America could remain half free and half slave. One concept would have to prevail, and he made it absolutely clear that he thought America played a very specific and special role in God's unraveling of history and God's plan for mankind. And I remember being in this blue-collar family. My dad was a janitor. We didn't know how we were going to pay our bills from week to week. But all of a sudden, I was thinking, I'm a citizen of something incredibly special. And I was so impressed by that speech that I literally decided in my living room at the age of, I was a teenager, that that Reagan was going to be president someday and I would work for him in the White House. And, you know, it ended up happening not because of anything I did, but because I thought that God's hand was in all of that. But that's my story. And we're talking about America's story, Jerry. And as I said, you know, we're on the eve of celebrating America's birthday. And in a couple years, we will celebrate America's 250th birthday. And Jerry, how can you have a birthday if we don't understand the life that we're celebrating? And it appears that that many of our citizens don't understand the life we're celebrating, this life of America. Do you agree that this forgetfulness wasn't accidental, that it's been very intentional by people that ended up taking over America's educational establishment?
Yeah, I do. I think the idea of getting rid of God, you know, in the schools has just been such a terrible, it's borne such terrible fruit. It's very ironic, too, by the way, because the schools for the masses were born out of the goal to teach the Bible to young people. In fact, I have a whole another one of these episodes in the Foundation of American Liberty series. It's called The Beginning of Wisdom, and it's all about the Bible and education. And it shows how for the first 200 years that the Bible was the chief textbook in one way or another. It was belief in the Bible that founded Harvard and Yale and Dartmouth and Princeton and so on.
Wait a minute. Stop right there, Jerry. Now, I know that, but say that again, because I think for a lot of people about these universities that are now centers of really a godless education in many cases, you send your children to these universities at risk that they'll come back completely rejecting everything that you taught them at your dinner table. Say that again about the origins of all the great universities.
Well, they were Christian-based. Harvard, which was named in honor of the Reverend John Harvard, its original motto in Latin was Truth for Christ and the Church. The Puritan leader Elihu Yale donated a lot of money to found that school. Yale, which was founded by Congregationalist ministers, Presbyterian ministers, founded what became Princeton, all the original schools. In fact, all of the Ivy League schools except Cornell, which was founded in the 1840s, all of the Ivy League schools otherwise were founded by Christians for Christian purposes, often just to train ministers of the gospel, you know, so that the gospel could perpetuate in America. Education at the younger level was all Christian. In fact, the first law in America, which was related to schools, was called the Old Deluder Satan Act, and this is in Boston, Massachusetts. It being one of the chief ends or objectives of that old deluder Satan to keep people from the Word of God, and they went out from there and explained that, okay, we're going to have an educated populace so that children can read the Bible for themselves. The Bible gave birth to education. By the time you get to the Founding Fathers, even the few that may have had not orthodox views as far as Christianity, small o, those men knew the Bible down to their fingertips, to use a phrase or quote from Donald S. Lutz. The Bible helped shape so much of what became the United States and the freedoms we enjoy. Instead of being a regressive force in history, the Bible has been a very positive force. And wherever the influence of the Bible has been felt, it's made a huge difference. Mm. Take away the Bible and you take away, you know, the idea of accountability to God. And a lot of times you end up with chaos and lawlessness and violence even.
Yes. Well said. You know, Jerry, we went so far down this road that 4 or 5 years ago, I had the honor of having a private lunch with a member of the Supreme Court, who I don't think I should name, but in the course of the lunch, this member of the Supreme Court said to me, you know, Gary, I don't think right now we have 5 votes on the Supreme Court to uphold religious liberty in the United States, a country that would not exist if it were not for religious liberty. Now, thank God, literally, thank God, that we have three new Supreme Court justices on the court from the time I had that lunch that former President Trump was able to get onto the court. And I believe we clearly do have probably six and a half votes, maybe, if on a good day for Chief Justice Roberts to preserve religious liberty. But it's an amazing thing that a country that's so clearly dependent on biblical ideas and the idea that liberty came from God would slide so far down this slope as to have the top court in the land at some point no longer understanding that.
That's true. Christians founded America, and they did it for religious liberty, and then they turned around and they gave that to others. And, you know, now basically the atheists, as my good friend Bill Federer, one of the guests in these programs, likes to say, you know, now the last one in the boat says, hey, it's too crowded here, and they're trying to shove out of the boat the first ones, the ones that actually founded the country in the first place.
Jerry, if Dr. Dobson would be with us today for this show, I know one of the things he would want to find out is, okay, we get it. We're in trouble. We're suffering from national amnesia. What can we do about it? And I guess what I'd like to ask is, if a family can figure out a way to homeschool or save enough money to get into a Christian school, those children are much more likely to hear the correct story about the role of Christianity in inspiring the founding fathers and as a basis of our liberty. But what do you do if you're stuck in the typical public school where instead of teaching this, they're trying to tell your little 9-year-old that he or she can decide what gender they are over the next couple of years? I mean, that's how far we've fallen. Can parents make this up at the dinner table and on their knees at bedtime with their children and at their church? What would you recommend?
Well, I would recommend an aggressive way in which that if a parent is stuck having to send their child into public school and there's really no viable option otherwise, then in a context like that, I would highly recommend supplemental resource, including, you know, again, I've made these films. This Foundation of American Liberty series is a good place to start, but there's all kinds of great resources from wonderful speakers and so forth that are out there that are available. I like to view this series that I've made, the Foundation, that it basically answers this question: what's right about America and how did it get that way? And so let's go ahead and look at, you know, there's an episode dedicated to the Declaration, an episode dedicated to the Constitution and so forth. But you're right. The parent has a great deal, a great challenge before them, because it's not just what's in the schools. It's what's in the media. And even in some of our churches where they're woke, you know, there's really a life and death struggle in some ways with the ideas of Karl Marx, you know, the interesting thing is, you know, the Marxists want to take over, you know, the major institutions of America. And actually, they already have, you know, the long march through the institutions and so forth. They've been very successful at that. But the interesting thing is, if they were able to succeed, heaven forbid, in overthrowing America as founded, what they would replace it with, I guarantee you, would be infinitely worse than what the founding fathers have bequeathed us in terms of basic human liberty. You know, Gary, about National Review, the publication founded by Bill Buckley. When the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991, when it imploded, there was a couple a couple, man and wife, who were former fellow travelers. They were former communists, Fox Genovese, a hyphenated name. And they said, wow, When the Soviet Union collapsed after 70 years of communism, what did they have to show for it? They couldn't even feed the people. All they had to show for it was tens of millions of corpses. I've never forgotten that line. And that's so true. There's not one square inch on this planet where somebody can show me where communism has done good for the people. You know, it's really good for, let's say, the Castro brothers with their wild parties and so forth. They've got tons of money. But the regular people, it's such a horrible existence that people will risk their lives in through shark-infested waters to try to come here to Florida so they can, you know, hopefully make a new life for themselves and take advantage of what you and I enjoy here every day. So freedom is ultimately the issue. And the founders were so wise, as you said earlier, they were very careful, knowing the sinful heart of man, when they set up the governing document, that is the Constitution. They said if men were angels, you know, government wouldn't even be necessary, but men are not angels. So we have to, you know, protect ourselves from our fellow citizens, but we also have to protect ourselves from the government, since the government is run by men and men are not angels. Hmm. And, you know, where did James Madison, who wrote those words, that's in Federalist number 51, where did he learn those things? Well, he learned them from the Reverend John Witherspoon, one of the key founding fathers. Most people don't even know who he was. He was the president of Princeton. He trained about at least 20 of the different founding fathers who served in different ways and gave them a thoroughly biblical worldview. He is one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence.
So, Jerry, as we're sort of bringing this to a conclusion, you know, we live in a cancel culture, right? I run into big hulking guys at my church, and I'll say to them, why aren't you doing more? And they go, well, Gary, I agree with you, you know, but I don't want people saying bad things about me on social media. And, you know, maybe I'll lose a couple of friends. And I'm thinking, good grief, you're living on the shoulders of men that literally rest their lives and fortunes. I know you know this almost by heart, and many of our listeners may, but I think it's another one of those things that we just, can you describe a little bit of what the risks were that the founding fathers, and quite frankly, all of the colonialists were taking when they dared to defy the greatest power in the world at the time?
Well, after trying to work with the British and seeing their rights as British subjects, you know, taken away over step after step after step, finally, the founding fathers, meeting in Philadelphia in 1776, they decided that they would actually write up a Declaration of Independence. There was a committee of five chosen, and that included John Adams and Ben Franklin and the young Thomas Jefferson. And Adams recognized Jefferson was a good writer, so he tasked him to write the first draft, and Jefferson did. And the Declaration of Independence mentions God four times. Now, they modified his declaration. By the way, one of the things he made in that declaration was he wanted to outlaw slavery right then and there. But the other founding fathers thought, well, we've got to get all the states to unanimously agree to this document. Let's get it passed, and then we can address that issue down the road, which they did eventually. And so anyway, the Declaration of Independence was definitely very radical. It mentions God four times. And one of the last lines in it, they talk about with a firm reliance on divine providence, meaning God. And they also mention we appeal our intentions to the supreme judge of the world, meaning Jesus Christ, quite frankly, because he is the judge of the world. And these were Christian men that were doing this, professing Christian men. 27 of them had the equivalency of seminary degrees. And they said, we are trusting in God as we mutually pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Mm. Many of them had their property stolen. A few of them even died because of their commitment. They made a voice vote on July 4th, 1776 for the final wording of the Declaration of Independence. And then over the next several months, as they could, different ones of them signed it. In fact, when Ben Franklin signed it, recognizing it was like signing your death warrant, Ben Franklin actually said, well, we shall all hang together, or most assuredly, we shall hang separately. And John Hancock, when he signed it in such a big way that he said, wow, King George III can read this without even wearing his spectacles. They were definitely taking a big risk in this Declaration of Independence, but they wanted to do this for themselves and for their posterity. They felt it would be the more honorable thing to do, to basically do the right thing as they understood it. And in fact, the son of John Adams, one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, he made a great statement. And I love this statement. It's kind of my motto. Duty is ours. Results are God's. Those men could have signed that. They could have ended up getting killed. But the bottom line is they signed it, and we have a free country. And here we are, their beneficiaries, 250 years later. But we're not doing a good job passing this information on to the next generation. And I pray that we can do more things like this. And I thank you so much, Gary, for this opportunity to try and educate people about this rich heritage that we've received. And unfortunately, as D. James Kennedy put it, he said, our freedoms and our heritage are kind of sifting through our fingers like sand, you know, at the beach, if you're holding your hands open and the sand is just pouring out. But there's a great heritage to bestow to the next generation for our freedom's sake.
Wow. So well said, Jerry. Thank you for the incredible work you've done over many, many years. It's been a pleasure and will be continue to be a pleasure to be in the same foxhole with you. The James Dobson Family Institute, we're proud to be your ally and have you as our ally. And I know, Jerry, that you join me in asking our audience, take the day to remind your children what a blessing it is to be in America, a country built on the idea of one nation under God. Thanks for being with us at this weekly podcast. Share it with friends and family, and come back next week.
Subscribe to Gary Bauer's Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, where you find your favorite podcasts. Just hit the subscribe button to ensure you receive every episode.